I have always believed in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit.
It's about finding a pathway forward.
News on News with Mark Latham.
And the leader of One Nation in New South Wales joins me this afternoon. Hello, Mark Latham. How are you?
Great, thanks, Brent. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Mark. Let's start with, well, it's the election campaign, one of the longest in history. Still about, what, 3 weeks to go? We're halfway through this, what feels like a marathon now, and I believe Albo's out of isolation tomorrow, I think, and they're going to officially launch their campaign this weekend.
In Perth, which is unusual. Not many national campaigns are launched in the West, but I suppose it shows that Labor's hoping to pick up a number of seats in Western Australia where the Liberal Party was wiped out at the last state election. So that's unusual in itself to have a national launch in Perth, but the people in Western Australia will obviously be somewhat impressed by that. And the campaign, we're not quite halfway. Don't you think it's a bit like the kids sitting in the back of the car on a long holiday journey? Are we there yet?
Yeah.
There's that element of it. It's certainly been unusual with one of the leaders in COVID lockdown for a week, and I don't think Labor's lost much by Albo not being on the campaign trail. He's avoided all those errors that plagued him in the first week, and some of the other characters have stood up. So, yeah, it's a campaign like no other.
Why do you think it seems as though, because there's been stories written about it this week by journalists, why do you think, Mark, it seems as though certain ministers have been placed in the background and we haven't heard from them? One that immediately springs to mind is, of course, Tanya Plibersek.
Well, Labor's got a team there that they're trying to promote. Plibersek was deputy leader to Bill Shorten, and it's no secret that Shorten and Albanese don't get on, and obviously the relationship between Plibersek and Albanese soured during the Shorten years, and they don't find a place for her. Penny Wong, very prominent, Christina Keneally, Jim Chalmers, Katie Gallagher and Jason Clare. So there's five in the pecking order now. Yeah. And Richard Miles, the hapless Richard Miles, there's six in the pecking order ahead of Tanya Plibersek, which seems a bit skew-if. But, yeah, I think they've had a souring of relations as she was Bill Shorten's deputy and is firmly in the Shorten camp.
Following the news yesterday that Australia's inflation rate had gone up to a 21-year high of 5.1%, they're saying that's a brand new threat for the Prime Minister and it could cost him dearly. The Reserve Bank, they're all talking about the first interest rate in years and years and years, I think it's since 2010 or something, happening next Tuesday when the Reserve Bank meet. And if they do decide to put interest rates up next week, Mark, that will be the first time that that's happened in an election campaign. It happened with 2007 with Kevin Rudd and John Howard.
Yeah, I think the Reserve Bank essentially has been asleep at the wheel. The inflationary threat, which obviously hurts pensioners, it hurts people who haven't had a wage increase. The inflation rate has been going up. You've only got to look at the United States where it's 8%, Europe where they've had the energy crisis and price rises. This was clear 6 months ago, and many economists were saying the Reserve Bank should have been tightening the interest rates at that point, tightening monetary policy, otherwise inflation in Australia would get out of control. Because the thing about interest rates, they take 12, 18 months to have full impact. Any change in policy there. So I think the Reserve Bank has been asleep at the wheel. And for the Morrison government, Scott Morrison saying, oh, it's an international trend, that's true enough. But there's two factors that he's presided over that are adding to inflation in Australia. One is just the vast size of the federal budget deficit and debt, which is now $1 trillion. All that fiscal stimulation adds to inflation. And there's no doubt that the spend-a-thon in the COVID period was over the top. They didn't need to do as much as they did by way of stimulus because unemployment is quite low. And the second factor, everyone talks about supply chain problems adding to price pressures, but the workplace mandates that Morrison did nothing about have obviously been a supply chain problem. So there's a couple of things there where you'd say Morrison's economic management and inflation has been poor. They have got unemployment low and falling, and economic growth looks okay. But for a lot of people, inflation is a dreadful thing. We haven't really seen it in Australia since the 1990s and the time of Paul Keating, where, you know, you watch the prices go up in the supermarket, people on a fixed income or barely any wage increase, they really get knocked around because every day they're falling further behind the prices. So it is new, relatively, how people will judge that. If there is an interest rate rise on Tuesday, it's probably a bit overdue.
Joanne says on the emails, inflation is rising due to spending and the cost of living. Labor is selling hard their desire to increase wages for workers. She says, Mark, will a wage increase only further fuel rising inflation as there'll be more cash in the economy?
Well, that's the great chicken and egg problem. People need a wage increase to keep up with the prices. Then you get into a wage price spiral. In the time of the Whitlam government in the 1970s, wage increases got way out of control. They got above 20%. And they obviously drove inflation we had at that time, and it took decades, really, to bring inflation back under control. So you don't want to get into a wage price spiral. The best wage increase is one that comes from productivity, where the workers are better off, the company is better off, and prices don't go up. But we've got no productivity agenda. Labor hasn't got one. Liberal hasn't got one. Labor would spend even more than the Liberal Party, so that would be an inflationary pressure. So if there are wage increases, they've got to be aimed at keeping up with inflation rather than adding to it.
What do you think when you hear, and you just said, that Labor, if they win, they're going to spend even more than what the Coalition have said they'll spend?
Well, now's not the time to add to the trillion-dollar debt. Now's not the time to make the deficit bigger. Now's not the time to add to inflation. It's there must be a concerted attempt to get the budget gradually back into balance. And Labor's spending plans are off the radar, whether you're talking about childcare, the NBN, and the really big one, and this is just so unnecessary from my perspective, they say they're going to spend $20 billion, probably much more than that to do it properly, $100 billion rewiring the transmission network to hook up all the renewables they want to build out the back of nowhere. I mean, we've had an efficient electricity grid, mainly around the coast, the power stations in New South Wales and the Hunter Valley and the Central Coast, Lake Macquarie. And they're all wired up, but they want to build a whole new electricity grid, and it's incredibly expensive to do this for land acquisition, for the physical infrastructure, to hook up to these solar farms and wind farms in the western districts of New South Wales. So that's the really big expenditure. Nobody's talked about it. Albanese said $20 billion, really. It's not the time to be throwing that sort of money at a grid that we've already got.
Another email coming through for you. Tommy says, can you ask Mark Latham if he has seen this Grattan Institute study about the effect of Labor's policy on the big emitters? Has he read the policy? Has he had a chance to read the policy? Because, I mean, it's, you know, some on the Labor side of things, what was it? Pat Conroy was in the Hunter saying there's no carbon tax. I don't think Jim Chalmers really knows. Chris Bowen says no, but then he says yes. But he uses a different language. Penny Wong says yes, and Albo says no, there will be not a carbon tax under a government I lead.
Well, it's total confusion on the Labor side. They should be able to explain their own policy, and if they can't explain the policy, nobody should vote for it. I have read not only the Labor policy for what they call the safeguard mechanism, but also the economic modelling report that goes with it, which is about 30 or 40 pages. We've discussed it previously on the show, Brent. We were ahead of the curve on this. Pat Conroy is wrong in saying that coal mines won't be affected. They're wrong in trying to pretend that jobs won't be lost. The truth is, Labor has, here's the bottom line, Labor has an official policy of reducing carbon emissions by 43% over the next 8 years. Now, you can't do that without hurting the big companies that emit carbon. And their policy is to say to BlueScope Steel, to Tomago in the Hunter Valley, to 18 coal mines in the Hunter Valley, if you emit more than 100,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent each year, for every tonne you go over the 100,000, you've got to buy a carbon credit. So it's like a carbon levy on these companies. And it will cost many millions of dollars. The average cost for those coal mines in the Hunter Valley is $35 million per annum. Now, of course, That will have the impact of reducing carbon emissions. Some of the companies will go broke. Others will have to do something about these carbon credits that they're obliged to purchase. It will achieve the 43% carbon emission reduction. But you can't have it both ways. You can't say we're going to cut carbon emissions in Australia by nearly half in the next 8 years, and no one's going to lose their job in a coal mine, in an aluminium smelter, in a steel factory, in a transport company, at Orica there with the fertiliser and ammonia. I mean, it's a fantasy for anyone to pretend that this is anything other than an economic wrecking ball. It's going to cost many thousands of jobs in the Hunter Valley in particular. Labor's policy there completely destroys the workers and the jobs. And for Pat Conroy, who's been advancing this climate change agenda against the interests of his own electorate, it's a complete sellout, but he's also effectively fibbing, lying to the electorate to say no coal mine will be affected. Of course they're going to be affected. It's right there in the policy in black and white.
Pauline Hanson was in the news yesterday, I think it was last night, that she's hit back at the Liberal Party over a decision to award preferences to the Jackie Lambie network ahead of One Nation in the Tasmanian Senate race. We had a few emails today. You can expect I was promoting the fact that you were coming on, and people want to know what your thoughts are about this, with her supporting Labor over Liberal.
Well, I don't know what's happened there in Tasmania, but certainly Jackie Lambie is on the left of politics. I don't know why the Liberal Party would preference her ahead of One Nation. But what I do know, in New South Wales, the One Nation preferences, where they are directed away from Liberals, are targeting these green woke Liberals. The ones, for instance, who said the gender activists should be set upon the religious schools and send them off to human rights tribunals. The ones that have basically forced Scott Morrison to adopt net zero 2050 job destruction policy. So here I'm thinking of Dave Sharma in Wentworth, Trent Zimmerman in North Sydney, Fiona Martin in the Cedar Roots, the inner city woke left-wing Liberals who, from my perspective, I see them like Matt Keane in the New South Wales Parliament. I would say to people, if you get rid of a Matt Keane or a Dave Sharma or a Trent Zimmerman out of Parliament, it's like getting a Green out of Parliament. It's like getting rid of someone who's in the Greens party. So these aren't real Liberals. These aren't traditional Conservatives, but certainly if there are Conservative Liberals who do the right thing with mainstream politics, job creation, but back to basics in the education system, they don't worry about all the gender fluidity rubbish, then One Nation will preference them. So an Angus Taylor in the seat of Hume, the Liberal candidate in Lindsay, Liberals elsewhere who are mainstream, they certainly get One Nation preferences.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. We're talking to the leader of One Nation in New South Wales, Mark Latham. We'll take a break and continue our discussion next.